Blog Talk Radio.
It's been one of them weeks. I've been having to get my hustle on, you know what I'm saying, at the 9 to 5, you know, trying to do some things, shake and bake, you know what I'm saying, trying to, you know, keep up on top of all the political stuff that's going on in our fair state, you know, and staying burnt up. Because black folks, I got something to say to some of y'all in a little bit, but, you know.
Tell them, Scout.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about this before we went on, so go ahead, let's. Hit them up.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm about to say they're going to get it. Look, there's a business argument I've been having with conservatives for a long, long time. And I know some of my conservative friends are listening, so I don't want y'all to be going, nah, 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 I told you so. Because if you do, I'm going to come slap you too. So, but there's this thing that they've always been talking to me about, low-information voters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. To tell you the truth, it's their reasoning for why they wrong as hell for it. Because if you have the right to be a low information voter, you have that right. Okay, there's nothing about the constitutional right that says that you have to be a highly involved individual to have the right to vote. You have the most certain right to be a low information voter. But this is the reason why they feel that there should be restrictions on voting, is because of the havoc that low-information voters wage inside of the political process. And I was listening to Al Sharpton's radio show this morning.
Bless your little heart.
Yeah. And some of our Hillary supporters, I can completely understand why you support her, because you can articulate the policy decisions and the way she operates that appeal to you. And I can completely 100% respect that, because that's who you are. And it's like my Bernie supporters. I understand there's a lot of us that can articulate the reasons of why we support Bernie. And we can go out there and argue those points very effectively. But there's these folks in the middle. And they're on both sides. They Bernie supporters and they Hillary supporters. And damn, there's a whole bunch of them that support Donald Trump.
Yes. Yes, there is.
But it's sickening when you hear people spit out talking points for why they voted somebody, and you sound like these political pundits on MSNBC, CNN, and Fox freaking News. Hell, I don't even want you repeating what I say verbatim. I want you to take the information that me and Stacey give y'all on this show each and every week. I want you to take and go back and research it. And if I give you some shit that don't sound right, I want you to come back and challenge me on it. Because I don't want you to be a low-information voter. I don't want you taking sound bites that come out of our mouths and utilize that for the reason why you're going to pick the next leader of the free world. Because I heard some shit that just had my mind ready to explode from both sides. One, I got you and black folks out there talking about, well, the Clintons done did so much for black folks and this, that, and other. And Charlotte asked, so tell us what they did.
I don't know. Bill Clinton played the saxophone on Arsenio's show.
You know, they get all quiet and they start
He's the first black president. You didn't know that? You didn't know Bill was the first black president. And you know there's a difference between black people and Negro and the N-word. So I don't think, was he the first black president?
But the thing is, I'm sitting up there and I'm listening to this, and I'm like, okay, all right. Then there's a Bernie supporter come in, and I was kind of feeling okay. And she was going down the line pretty good, because she was talking about, I can't get behind the Clintons when particularly they supported the crime bill, which has led on to so much mass incarceration. She was going down the line real good. Then Sharpton threw that curveball, and I knew this curveball was coming, because it's the same curveball everybody throws when you go down that trail with Bernie Sanders about the crime bill. He was like, well, Bernie voted for you. And then the caller said, he voted for it, but there was something in the bill that made him want to vote for it. This is this point where you need to stop being a low information voter. You need to know why Bernie Sanders voted for that crime bill. You need to be able to explicitly talk about that amendment. You need to know exactly what it was so you can fight back and hit that curveball when it knocked that bitch out the park. One, if anybody didn't know, the reason Bernie Sanders voted for that crime bill is that attached to it, which they do this in Congress and our state legislators all the time, they will tag some shit on that they know nobody's going to vote against.
And they go, so, and they're called poison pill amendments.
They know they attach stuff to legislation that they know that you gotta support, that you ain't finna let die because of this. And for Bernie Sanders, it was the violence against domestic violence against women's act.
Right, and the same for immigration.
That women were protected against violence from their domestic partners, and that there would be some type of federal remedy for that. This is something he's championed for his entire career. Something that needed to happen. Okay.
On immigration, it happened. And that was another thing they brought up. Well, he voted against the immigration bill in, I believe it was 07. Now, the reason he voted against the bill was because, and people, you know, particularly for black people, for her to throw that, for that charge to be thrown against Bernie was very disingenuous, because there was an issue with that bill, with the visas that are allowed. And for black people who are listening, if you think immigration doesn't matter, immigration reform matters, because a lot of the immigrants who come from the African diaspora, and we're talking about Caribbeans and Africans, they come here on visas, and they come here to either further their education or work in specific industries. There's a limit to visas that are coming in, and there was a really strong debate between the unions, the legislators, about those type of visas and the number that we were going to let in and who it was going to affect. If that bill had passed, it would have detrimentally affected African Americans and those in the African diaspora, the African community, who were coming here more in immigration. He did the right thing in order to get us a better bill.
Exactly. And this is a thing that we don't understand, and it's going to be something that actually ties into some of what we're going to be talking about in today's show, because there's a lot of things that we misunderstand when it comes to the other minority groups who live amongst us in this country, that we don't understand that we share a lot of commonalities. For all you sisters out there and brothers who love your West Indian brothers and sisters that you love when you hear them Jamaican and Trinidadian and Virgin Island accents, you all into that, and you having you roots from West Africa and you proud of your Jamaican heritage, guess what? That is an immigrant heritage. Jamaica is not a part of the United States, and I know we go out of a lot of us ride back and forth across there like it ain't no big body business. It does not seem a foreign country to us. Jamaica is a sovereign nation amongst the family of nations, okay? You have to immigrate from Jamaica to become to America, and you have to become a citizen. It's just not automatic. For all our Haitian brothers and sisters, and y'all have to be mad about this, because you can run from Cuba. As long as you make it to American soil, you get to stay. But if you're Haitian, and the Haitian government has had shown more repression than any government in the Caribbean, they don't It ain't like the Haitian government has provided their people with free health care and free schools and great medical schools, and they've done all the things that the Cuban government has done.
Hillary and them, they've done great work in Haiti, right?
Yeah, but no, y'all sit there talk about it, because I was down there. And see, this is the thing. I invaded Haiti under the orders of Bill Clinton. I was a member of that force. I was a member of that force that invaded Haiti in 1994. I was on board the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower nuclear aircraft carrier, hull number 69, with the 10th Mountain Division Aviation, the Aviation Brigade. I was there.
Could you be a little more specific?
The lies told. We led the damn force. And we went down there to supposedly, what was the damn Restore Hope or whatever the fuck it was called that they sent us down there, all nice operational nothing. We went down there with overwhelming force. Why in the hell did we send the whole United States Navy, the damn British West Indian Squadron, the Jamaican Navy, the Dutch, everybody was out there to go put their foot up the ass of a small, poor-ass country.
Because they want to make it the Taiwan of the West.
And then we go down there, and she still ain't no better.
We raised so much money, and we built all these houses. Don't let me get into it. Remember the fight between Joe Beasley and Senator Ford about whether they did down there, supposed to have done in Haiti? And Joe Beasley came back. He went on his fact-finding mission, and yes, all of this has been done.
So when we talk about the Clintons and the work that they have done for African-Americans, I want you to turn around and look at our community.
Scout.
The war on drugs has expanded on the bill.
Scout,
we
lost you. We're having technical. There we
children.
Go. You're back, baby. We lost you.
We were animals that needed to be put to heel. That is some shit I can't take back. I'm sorry. That is some shit you can't. That ain't a mistake. You could call me. That ain't a mistake. Bernie Sanders ain't never told us we need to be put to heel. Who the hell talks that kind of way? A group of human beings need to be put to heel. But no, them some good white folks. We need to support them. We need to support them. You the bad nigga if you sitting up there not supporting the good Bill and Hillary Clinton. And that's how y'all saying. Now, I ain't saying Bernie is the damn Messiah. I'm not. He is going to probably face more doggone. He's going to face resistance just like Hillary will. Face resistance just like President Barack Obama has. Just because of the makeup of the Congress that we have. But that's meaning we need to also be making sure that we elect congressmen and senators, state legislators, that are going to back up the same revolution that we're proposing today. So that really just kills me. It kills me to my heart. You know, we're getting ready to have to go in here and do our burn treatment. So I'm finna sit here, and I'm going to calm down here for a second, because I think Ms. Delano on the other end here. So... But black folks, we need not be low-information voters. If you vote for Hillary because you actually believe in neoliberalism, then go right away. And if you don't know what neoliberalism is, then you need to go look that up and you need to reconstitute what you're voting for. I understand what democratic socialism is. I understand why I'm supporting a man who considers himself a democratic socialist. I have no problem with it. Yes, I am very much a capitalist. I believe in free enterprise, not free market. I believe that we should spend our tax money and allocate our money to a program that will better suit our people than the military-industrial complex. So, you there, Stacey? I'm here. I sure am here. Let me...
Hello.
Hey, Noah. It seems like we lost one of us. I don't know if it's Stacy or me. She's saying she can't hear me.
Oh.
But I hear you. So, okay. We're going to see if we can get Stacey reconnected. Stacey, try to reconnect. Let me send her a message here. And you go ahead with your burn treatment, honey.
All right. Well, good afternoon. Happy Sunday, everyone. I mean, you know, it's been another week. It just seems like each week we get further and further into this primary season. It gets crazier and crazier and crazier. I think I'm going to start with yesterday and work my way back to earlier in the week. But this week, I'm going to start with yesterday. I'll start with the good stuff. So some of the things that happened this week, you know, everyone's still pretty upbeat and stuff despite Senator Sanders not winning the Nevada caucus yesterday. However, there is like a projection graph that a couple of people have posted that shared that show that actually, you know, the results yesterday are kind of on track with what the projections were to be. And it's not really that different than the way, then Senator Obama fared in Nevada as well in 2008. I think that, you know, looking at the projections yesterday, there were some really interesting trends that got tweeted out. One of the biggest things, two-thirds of caucus goers said they were concerned about income inequality. And I think that speaks volumes when we're talking about this political revolution. We're talking about what Senator Sanders is doing. I mean, he's putting a conversation on the table that is often not on the table. Poverty, income inequality is usually one of the very last things we're discussing. Also this week, you know, last week we talked a little bit about the different photos and what was a real photo of Senator Sanders and what wasn't. Well, apparently the Chicago Tribune archive has identified a photo of Senator Bernie Sanders being arrested during an August 1963 segregation protest in Chicago. There's also video footage that is being that is thought to most likely be from the same incident. So, you know, it kind of puts the quiet on all that nonsense from Capehart and others from the last week or two. As we go forward, you know, we're looking forward towards South Carolina this Saturday. There's been a lot going on. So, like, the big thing that happened in the last 24 hours in social media really blew up all over Twitter was this allegation that Dolores Huerta, renowned, you know, Latina activist, contemporary of the late Cesar Chavez, she tweeted out yesterday that during the caucus that she participated in, there was an issue in terms of translation, and they did not have the caucus did not have a translator. I mean, we heard so many issues about the caucuses yesterday and about it, and I'll get into that in a moment. But anyway, she tweeted out that not only she offered to translate, and she claims that Bernie Sanders supporters specifically shouted her down saying English only, that there were chants of English only going on in the caucus, which, of course, you know, is horrid and racist, right, if that was, in fact, what happened. However, video, and then her tweet was retweeted, of course, several thousand times, including by actress America Ferrera, who's best known for starring in Ugly Betty, Sisterhood of Traveling Pants, as well as Real Women Have Curves. So those two women with their huge following, and they had not retracted that information yesterday despite video coming up showing that the only thing that was shouted out during that time was neutral, because Huerta is a Clinton surrogate, and people wanted to have a non-affiliated translator, which I believe from what I understand is in the caucus rules, that a translator provided would not be affiliated with either campaign. I mean, that only seems to be fair. It only seems to make sense. The other thing that I think is interesting to note is that it was noted that half the room actually was bilingual. So this notion out there that somehow the Sanders supporters at a caucus stifled the Latino vote is just absolutely ridiculous. It's a blatant mischaracterization of what actually happened. And there's so many outlets hurried up and jumped on the story. And, of course, you know, it's understandable. Same with Representative Lewis's comments, you know, the week earlier. People jump on because it's the word of someone that we have known for decades, who we trust. But, sadly, you know, we have these people who have their own very good, strong reputations, but now they're affiliated with the Clinton campaign, and in the midst of all the machine stuff that's going on, the negative drama that's going on, it's very hard to accept that someone is not somehow influenced by that whole side over there. And you know, she's 80, I think she's an 84, 85-year-old woman, and I can understand that maybe it could have been a misunderstanding of what happened when people are saying, no, we don't want you to do something, particularly when she's, you know, well-respected in her community. I mean, I don't think that anyone anticipated anyone to respond to her that way, but at the same time, it's like, look, you chose a side. You didn't chose to just be a community leader. You chose to be a campaign surrogate, and in that moment, you can't necessarily now try to flip-flop back. And I think that just goes into how we need to hold people accountable just going forward. But the tweet, you know, the vitriol on Twitter, again, come on, you guys. I understand that you get upset with people because they're mischaracterizing things or they're not being clear or they're stating things, you know, incorrectly, but that doesn't help. Because in the conversation, Shipley turned from, you know, Bernie Sanders caucus supporters being racist to Bernie Sanders, you know, supporters on Twitter being racist. And we also know that that's total hogwash. They don't pay attention to the people who, like, stalk George Lopez's timeline, right? They're Hillary supporters who basically stalk George Lopez's timeline and say all types of crazy stuff. And no, they're not just fake Republicans pretending to be Hillary supporters. You know, these are people who are out there supposedly supporting. So we have an issue, we've talked about it several times, with progressive politics and other people engaged with other people. You know, you guys just need to just keep sticking to the facts. Keep sticking to the policy. I mean, you know, you can't say we have the higher moral ground on one hand and then we stoop really low when we don't like what somebody says on the other hand. So that was very interesting yesterday. And several news sources, you know, Huffington Post, people still need to update their stories and retract because Susan Sarandon, who was also at that specific caucus, let's note, America Ferrera was not even there. She just retweeted what she saw on Twitter. Very irresponsible of her to not go back and correct what she did. Susan Sarandon was actually there at that caucus site along with some nurses from the National Nurses Union, and they provided a longer video and confirmed that that is in fact not what happened, that people wanted a neutral translator. And ultimately what did happen, the moderator of the caucus decided there would be no translator. So that was one of the many issues with the caucus. You had long lines. You had people running out of paper for their paper ballots. You had machines breaking down during the registration process. There is some video that popped up of Hillary caucus voters who did not register before caucusing. We just had anyone. You know, there are tons of things that go on, and people also posted accounts from 2008 that similar hijinks, so to speak, happened. When then Senator Obama was also trying to campaign and run in Nevada. So that was like the big hubbub yesterday and well into this morning as well. But it hasn't deterred the campaign, of course, because there are some accounts showing that he actually fared very well with Latino voters, destroying the myth that Bernie is a white person only candidate. I mean, you know, people like me and Scout and Stacey and others should already have squashed that myth, but, you know, that still persists, and people continue to spread that BS around. But, you know, also this week we had another town hall leading up right before, and there were some really good, there's some really interesting comparisons drawn between the way the questions that are asked at the town hall of Bernie Sanders compared to even the Republican candidates. This week, Bernie Sanders was asked, like, did he believe in, you know, how was he not going to be like Fidel Castro and other, you know, basically dictators? And that was just like the craziest question ever. Like, why would you ask that? When some of the stuff proposed by Republicans is actually like a dictator. You know, as on that level, was like, you know, you can't do this and restricting people's liberty and stuff. So it was just like the craziest question. But of course, you know, he continued to push through, as he always does. He had some really good points. The other thing that we saw on social media yesterday come out about a caucus is SEIU apparently sent out information to its members talking about how Hillary Clinton supports a $15 minimum wage. Now, on the face, I guess the flyer is factually accurate. She has used that language that she supports the battle. However, that's misinformation. It's misleading. You know, she does not actually endorse that as a policy in her platform. She is pro $15 an hour in her home state of New York, but she is not $15 an hour national federal minimum wage. Only, and she's not, her, even her $12 an hour, she's not pushing for unionization. Only, let's get this correct, everyone, and SEIU, shame on you for misleading your membership this way, particularly since you have so many people who are engaged in the fight for 15. It is really disgusting to see this type of stuff happening. But people, you need to educate yourself. If the call is come get my vote, make sure the information you are being given, don't rely on anybody else to give you the information. Make sure it's accurate, because come get my vote, but your union is setting you up to support the person that does not support what your call is at all. She is pro $12 an hour, and she's very, she's way too agreeable to negotiate away, you know, the needs of those of us not near the top.
Right.
A lot of stuff
happened.
Jeb Bush.
I felt a little bad for Jeb last night.
I did. Jeb Bush is gone. Sorry, boo. Donald Trump won big in South Carolina in the South Carolina Republican primary, and one of the big things, you know, trending about that was 70% of the people who supported him or whatever agreed that Muslims should be deported. There's just all types of stuff going on, and we really need to look at what the big picture is as we're going into
not just the primary system,
but this general election. I mean, yeah, it is the South, and we got to be real clear about that. We are in the South. But I caught the end of Kaylin and Scout's comments, and we can't be low issue voters. We have to really ask ourselves what is going on. I see things on Twitter. I mean, be careful of these so called intellectuals and blogs you follow on Twitter. Like, really vet the information that people are giving you. If people are giving you information that's coming from sources they write themselves, nothing wrong with those of us who write our own blog posts and op ed pieces, but if they're not actually factually correct, there's some, like, black news site on Twitter that I can't even remember the name right now, but I had to unfollow it because it's like it just had post after post of misinformation and just attacks on Bernie Sanders. Like, you know, I'm a big girl. I can handle the truth about my candidate, but I find that a lot of people who support Hillary Clinton cannot. You know, they either resort to attacks on Twitter, or they just bash, or they're just very negative. How are you talking to people who are supposed to be coming out and voting? How are you talking to people about what is not going to happen, so you just don't even need to worry about it or support that? That doesn't get me or anyone else. Like, it's just not going to work, particularly when we have issues with low voter turnout, when we see our midterm elections, our state house elections, et cetera. You know, there's not even a conversation really happening about how do we reclaim all the lost seats. Everyone's just like, oh, well, we're not going to be able to do anything in 2020 anyway. That's defeated. And I don't want a defeated person or defeatist mentality in a position of leadership. The other conversation we need to get past is this: you're not a real Dem test. You're not a real Dem. The Dem loyalty test? I mean, what is the
Dem? Oh, my God. If we could please put that one to bed, but they're going to ride that horse until the end, because
they're going to ride that horse to the end. They are. But if
they're
going to
ride that bad boy.
Earlier this week, I had, you know, this was when, you know, Mayor Reed in Atlanta made his statements about, you know.
Oh, yeah, your tweet.
I went in because it's pissing me. This has been pissing me off because this is the one thing to forgive me. And I said it earlier in the show. If you are supporting Hillary Clinton and you have good, solid reasons why, I can respect that. But to sit there and just say, you know, she's going to support the legacy of President Obama, this, that, I am sick and tired of them using Obama's name like it's God. You know,
but
Jesus.
Wait a minute. If you're a Latino, you should be worried about that, because he's been the deporter in chief. So it's kind of stunning. If he's going to continue the policy, if she's going to continue Obama's policy, you're going to continue with the record deportations?
Well, she's a deporter in Abuela, too, right? Like, she's
I love President Obama. I love President Obama. I do. I voted for him twice. But there's some things I have disagreed for all his administration. The first letdown with me, And I know we've sat there and we've championed and we've talked about how great a victory it was, but the victory was a short victory. It was kind of like the first Gulf War. We put down there, but we didn't go all the way. You know, and I'm talking about the Affordable Care Act. Because we voted Obama in on the platform of single-payer universal health care.
And what happened?
We have an individual mandate. This demo is still privatized. You know, this was to get the insurance companies on board, you know, to keep the crony capitalists happy. We got ACA. And I'm proud of ACA. ACA provided me health care when I did not have avenue to get any other health care. I'm proud of that. But I still think that we still should go for single-payer health care in the United States of America. It is no reason why we couldn't.
Let's be clear, too. Let's be clear. We're not, you know, it's again, educate yourself. Nobody, not Senator Sanders, who was a part of me that wrote the bill, you know, and look at the difference in Clyburn's statements. Can I just say something?
Did Clyburn not look like he was under gunpoint making that doing that press conference?
Well, what was very interesting, what came up on Twitter, of all places, right, is actually the audience of young people he was speaking to at Allen University, quickly known by Allen University, back in November. There was a criminal justice forum, a presidential justice forum, held place where at Allen University, and guess who showed up? Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders. Guess who did not show up? Right, exactly. So another forum, you know, Hillary Clinton only shows up at forums that are televised. She does not show up when it's just people direct, you know, real issues. When there are puff pieces and softball questions, of course, she's there. She did not show up at the BET. It was live streamed by BET, did not get put on TV for whatever reason. But what was very interesting, though, was there was an article that discussed that got tweeted out by some students that actually most of the students in the room that he was talking to, while they politely and smiled and nodded their heads, they were all feeling the burn. He announced his support for Hillary Clinton to a room full of students who were feeling the burn. Why? Because Bernie has been on campus, I believe, at least twice now, and directly met and talked to students. You know, there were two students that said they were kind of feeling Hillary Clinton. There were a couple who were undecided, but they weren't really. One young lady was quoted as saying that he didn't say anything that actually motivated me. They observed it too. He didn't seem like he was moved. What I do find interesting is just 2 weeks ago, I think it was February 8th or so, the Longshoremen's group, along with South Carolina AFL-CIO and others, met to have a summit about the fight for 15, about a $15 minimum wage in South Carolina. You have all these people who are involved, engaged, and really supposedly believe in this fight for 15 movement, and you're supporting the candidate that keeps telling everyone that is not possible, that she's not going to push for it, that she's going to settle for 12 and probably really come in more around 10. That doesn't even make any sense. Like, from a strategy standpoint, like, why are you setting up all these people for the woo-woo like that? Like, they're just not okay. But what I did notice, though, in his statement, because I think he got asked about Senator Sanders, and he made a comment about how, you know, they worked together on the ACA. He kept it positive. And I think that I agree with you, Stacey. I think he was under pressure to endorse. But I think that he sees that there's potential for things to swing a different way. And so he needs to make sure he's not a part of that whole negative clapback cycle that happened, you know, last week with our Atlanta folks.
Nobody wants to deal with that. That's one of the points.
It's really disheartening to see the way that Kasim Reed attacked, you know, Senator Fort as well. He basically,
well, that's what,
you know,
he does.
I mean, well, yeah.
Anybody who's
interacted
with him on Twitter, that's just how he rolls.
He's notorious.
Somebody very close.
Remember,
to me.
Remember, he's from Southwest Atlanta. That's how we roll.
Well,
somebody that's very close to me, but I'm not gonna say their name, because every time you say something to Kasim that he doesn't like, you know, he goes and cries off like a little, you know, well, I'm not gonna use the derogatory term that was used at the point in time, but yeah, he goes off and cries like a little B word.
Bitch.
Well, the problem too is that when we're talking about
I know
what
you're talking about.
Just to have the mayor of Atlanta blast things, someone about economics, right? You have all these so-called black and Latino leaders, too, talking about how economics is not an issue for us. With poverty, with low-wage employment, when wealth acquisition disproportionately impacts our communities, it's absolutely disingenuous. It is disgusting. And it's seen as perpetrated on social media by surrogates is also problematic.
There's no problem with economics for them. They are fine.
No, not
they
at
are
all.
Okay.
And trying to control
okay.
the rest of us.
They are fine.
Trying to control the rest of us.
Nice cars,
it's a problem.
Nice houses. They live in the life. They, and you know, that's been a problem for African Americans throughout our history. Is that the ones that pick, the fact that they need to share with anybody else, or they, as long as it's okay with them, it's fine. Last time to see, somebody tell me last time to see what they're in with the hood. Somebody tell me what they're in with the hood. He ain't been in the hood in a while, because they're in the hood.
He may ride through. I mean, he may come through and do a ribbon cutting here and there on some project, but we really don't see him, and we damn sure don't see him in Southwest Atlanta. But
look,
since
look,
we're talking about Kasim Reed,
he comes in. He has about as much protection with him as the freaking president of the United States. The president got far from trying to knock him off. Kasim got his police, his security details so tight because his own people want to whip his ass.
I rolls deep. But here's the thing. If we're going to talk about Kasim Reed, we also need to talk about Representative John Lewis.
Well, we went on Don. I'm on Don already. But we also, but he's been wrong so many times. And it's starting to make me wonder, because, you know, he can be fickle at his time, too. And, you know, and as I was talking last week, as I had did research on how he did Julian Bond to get that seat, it's not surprising.
Yeah.
It's not surprising
that
he gets down like that. So, I mean,
well, you know,
we have, and some of our folks get down like that. That's how we do it in the hood. You got to cut down to get down. So, I mean, hey.
Well, you know, that's that political mentality that when all of the values and all of that stuff goes out the window, we getting ready to duke. So, I mean, that if people don't know that, we're not going to go in and tell you. Just look for it. But the big problem for me was when he came out and said that Bernie Sanders shouldn't be promising free college to people. And it was like, really? Really? Because he has a bill that he co-sponsored a bill that promises free college to those Native Americans. So I was like, well, how are you going to sit up there and talk about Bernie shouldn't promise free college to anybody, and that this was the line that got me. You know, nothing's free, and you got to work for it, and my mama told me I got to work hard. These kids, particularly these kids who were coming out of, you know, the rural and urban schools that do not have the same advantages as other ones, because we do know that there's inequality. They have all admitted it. So there's no way. These kids have worked hard enough. Just them getting into college is them working hard enough. And to sit there and tell them, you know, I'm tired of the narrative, you don't work hard enough, you just need to do better. People are working themselves literally to the grave. Students are working themselves to basically a psychotic break, trying to get into college because we keep telling them you ain't going to be nothing unless you go to college. And for him to say that, it was just a smack in the face. And, I mean, he's my congressman. I have defended and stood up for John Lewis for years. But I can't do it anymore, because what I've seen and heard come out of his mouth the past couple of weeks has been just stunning, and it reinforced everything that has been said behind closed doors about John Lewis for years. And 2016 is coming up. He's up for reelection then. He's also a superdelegate.
Nobody's going to challenge him.
Probably not. Probably not. And you know, here's the quandary with John Lewis. If you look at his voting record, you couldn't ask for a better representative. But when you make moves like this, people start questioning who you with. Who you with? And, you know, for the way, you know, this race, there's nothing wrong with being loyal with your people. But John Lewis has every right to vote the way he wants to as John Lewis the man. When you are John, Representative John Lewis, you need to vote according to what your district says. That's the way it should go for anybody. I'm not trying to take you as one person, one vote. John Lewis has a right to do that. But this is... and if you're going to be critical of Bernie Sanders, make it valid and check your own backyard first. Because I was just, I was like, come on now. Really? I mean, if you have to pull something out from that particular place, that tells me you got nothing. And that tells me the reason you're doing this is for reasons other than you truly support Hillary Clinton. Now, I don't know if they sitting up there with, like I said, they got files on people, or they sitting up there, they got somebody in the parking lot in a black sedan. I don't know what's going on. I really don't want to know, but do the right thing. And I have a petition that's on Move On going around. It is, if you go to Move On Petitions, and it's made out to Representative John Lewis. You can find it there. You can find it on that Down South and Dirty page. We're going to be delivering it on Monday, February 29th, at his office in Atlanta. I've got some folks from Panthers for Bernie. They have a petition that's coming. But this whole superdelegate thing and just the stuff that's coming out of Representative Lewis's mouth, if you live in the 5th Congressional District, you want to have your voice heard, he probably will not be there, but will be speaking to one of his staff members. Come with me. Come with me and let's do this, because that has been, you know, watching John Lewis. And I got a problem with how some people went in on John Lewis because of those comments. A sellout, I'm good with. Calling John Lewis a coon?
No.
That makes me feel some type of way.
No.
That,
no,
I got a problem with. I'm upset with the man. You know, I'm not very happy with him, but to call him a coon?
I never said I lost any love for the man. But the thing is, it's like this. Now, if I was a state representative, if I was a United States congressman, and I had superdelegate powers, I would have waited till March 1st came. I would have waited till March 1st.
At least.
See how my congressional district broke to a one or the other. Okay? Because I'm going to tell you what would happen. If superdelegates, particularly those who are the United States congressmen and those other leaders, if they were to wait and see how these districts broke before they pledged their vote, we would watch a difference in how the campaign actually did their field work. You would see more boots on the ground in Democratic congressional districts and in places where superdelegates were elected officials that could drive up that vote, and you would see more voter engagement in those districts, because they knew they had to, that was the way they was going to win that superdelegate. But now they don't care, because this is like they said. We could go right now, if Bernie and Hillary keep on the same track that they're going right now, they will go into the convention with near about the same amount of doggone delegates. If it was the track.
And
like
it also
track,
helps
right
bring, and if you do it this way, then you're showing your electorate that you are capable of conducting an election in a fair manner where everybody had an even playing field. That has been the biggest contention with this. If the Democrats really want unity going into the general, they better clean their shit up, because if they keep on doing this, They're going to go into the general with a whole lot of people pissed off because we see what's going on. And it's easier to say, let's come together in the general and vote for the nominee. If I could come up and say, you know what, my man Bernie, he did the best. He got outbested by Hillary. I can accept that. But with all of this that's going on, there's people who are going to be hell. They're like, hell no.
This is very difficult. Nobody won't admit it. That's in part of the mainstream party establishment here in Georgia. But this is the reason Jason Carter and Michelle Nunn did not win the election. This is why Democrats lost across the board in Georgia, is because we felt like that there was, and we had a very strong primary season. We had people, multiple people running in different spots, but everybody felt like that the party had its own picks and chooses before we got into the primary. And when it was over with, the supporters of the other side, a lot of those people sat their asses at home.
Well, I mean, not that they did, that people thought they had a pick. They did, Scout. They did pick Michelle Nunn.
I was trying to be diplomatic there, but no, that was a pick. But they put like
it
this.
Is what
me
it is.
Me being a member of the party, I'm going to sit there and say our leadership, because there was a lot of us that did not agree with this. We had this argument over 2.5 years ago. And matter of fact, the same person, and I'm going to call you out. I've been meaning to do this, and I'm going to call you out because he's no longer, I think, a member of the party, but he's been talking a whole bunch of shit lately. And this is my homeboy, and I love you, but Steve Perkins, I don't know if you still first vice chair in the county or not, but you was the one who pushed for us to be able to make the endorsement, or not to make the endorsements. You pushed for that, and we lost it. Now, I understand that why you did that, because you believe in coronations. Now, I believed in it from the simple point of fact, because at that time I knew that we had Republicans trying to sneak in our party. But what happened was we defeated that shit. That shit didn't pass in the state committee. I'm glad that it didn't. Now that I see what's going on, because it was nothing but a point to try to keep outsiders from coming back in. We don't want outsiders in our party. I got a call here. Let's see who this is. This number seems mighty familiar.
Yeah, it's a mess. They have made it clear. And you know what's funny is how people got all up in their feelings. I'm the establishment. Well, you are, Blanche. You are. I mean, look at how you're acting. Look at who you're protecting. And I mean, so yeah, you are the establishment. And all I can say is embrace it. But it's clear that the party has people who they want and who they don't want. And this is why the superdelegate system is concerning to me, because it only serves one purpose. There's only one reason to use superdelegates, and which basically is nuking someone from space. If the party deems that the nominee is not who they want, that's how the superdelegates activate and get that party out. Debbie Wasserman Schultz even told it.
She said that this week. It's unbelievable. I just want to add,
and she said it out loud and proudly and with no regret.
Very much so. And this is the problem. When you're telling us we're not all Democrats, when you're saying that only the real Democrats support, do you not see what you're supporting? Like, this is cronyism at its finest or worst, however you want to phrase it. It is ridiculous. But
if you want to silence the room, ask a Democrat what exactly is a Democrat. And I guarantee you, either you'll hear frogs and crickets, or you'll get the I Have a Dream speech. But they cannot give you bullet points on what a Democrat stands for. You know, you go to a Republican, you go to a Tea Partier, they can break it down. Boom, boom, boom. They'll give you an elevator speech with three points. Bam, bam, bam. You go to a Democrat and they go, "Oh, we're for this, we're for that," and you go, "But so, you know, that's everybody else. They can't clearly define what they're for. They're all over the place, and that's the problem. When you say you're a Democrat, what the hell does that mean? And if I'm a bad Democrat, what the hell does that mean?"
Will Rogers said that I belong to a Hold on, you got
okay,
me?
Okay, see? That's like asking somebody the meaning of life. What's a Democrat? I don't know.
Will Rogers said that he belonged to a...
He did not belong to an organized party. He was a Democrat.
Yeah, exactly. Did you just... Hold on. Do we have a number switch up here or something?
That's me. I had to switch up because...
Okay, I got gremlins going on.
I was calling in over the internet, voice over internet, and apparently me and AT&T, we're going to have to break up because my internet keeps going in and out, so I had to call in on my cell phone.
Okay, because I know I got a dead spot in there for a second. Yeah, folks, this is live. You know, this is how we do it. So, yeah.
I'm in on the bat phone, and I'm versatile like that, so.
Okay. But, you know, this was a good burn treatment. We got to, you know, go in now and try to get into what our main topic was. And, you know, our main topic was, you know, we've been doing Black History Month. And one of the things that we've been attempting to do is talk about historical events and things in our community that we really just don't talk about a whole lot. And this one here was interesting when Stacy brought it up, and I thought about it, and I was like, oh, this is a good one. Because there's a group of people, and we've talked about this a little bit earlier in the show, and we were talking about immigration and this, that, and other, but there's a group of people, there are other minorities who live inside of our community. They're minorities inside the minority community. We have groups of Asians and Latinos.
And Indians, East Indians.
That's Asians, you know, South Asians. You know, they belong to the AAIP caucus. You know, so, you know, all of them caucus, you know, the South, you know, Indians, Pakistanis, caucus with the Koreans, the Japanese, the Vietnamese, the Filipinos, the island nations of Fiji, the Pacific Islanders, all of them caucus mm-hmm. together. So, and from a Democratic point of view, we're going to put they all in the Asian caucusing together. Just like the Latinos, you actually have Hispanics and Latinos, and I've been told that there's a difference. I'm not going to get into that because I don't want nobody cussing me out. But they all come in up under one umbrella, just like with African Americans. We have West Indians and actual Africans and stuff piled in with us. So, and so that makes it a very interesting difference. So, but yes, I have a friend of mine just came to Facebook. Yes, there's a difference. I will attempt to break it down for the difference between Latinos and Hispanics. But like I said, I'm not trying to get cussed out today.
I can understand. I'm from New York, and one thing you learn really quick, you don't call them Dominicans or Mexicans.
Your Latinos or Mexicans, that's the Central and Latin America. Hispanics are those from Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, the Hispaniola. I guess we can, you know, that's where Hispanic comes from. Hispaniola, that's the Dominican Republic. You have Puerto Rico and any other Spanish-speaking territories of the Caribbean, which there are a whole bunch. So that's how that plays out. Just like, I think South Americans sometimes roll into the Hispanic category, and I think it's more of a geographic and somewhat linguistic type of deal there. So, now, inside of the African American community, we have Asians and Latinos that live amongst us. In the Black community, if you go to the local stores, if you go into the hair salon, to the hair store, or the nail shop,
beauty supply,
who are you gonna come across?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have Korean, maybe Vietnamese running the the nail shops and the, you know, and the hair supply store. You go to the gas station or the hotels that's in the neighborhood. You usually see South Asians, Indians, and Pakistanis. You know, everybody got your food joints. You got your Mexican joints and your Chinese joints. You see your Latino. If you see construction going on in your neighborhood, who's usually doing it? The crews that are putting the roof on your house. You have the Sikhs and the South Asians. Yeah, I got some folks coming up behind me on Facebook. They listening actively, telling me the stuff that I'm missing. You can't forget the Sikhs. They run the gas station.
Let's just put everybody in one group, all of them.
Yeah, all of them. Yeah,
all of them.
Now, if you look at like where I grew up in Gresham Park, there's a lot of Latinos over there right now.
Where
the Kanye?
I'm in Southwest Atlanta. We got little pockets over here, Cleveland Avenue, Hayville. Oh, my God. There's a big Latin community in Hayville.
God forbid you live in Clarkston, Georgia. Shout out to Mayor Ted Terry. Yeah.
We love Ted.
Clarkston, Georgia is like the United Nations of Georgia. You go through there, if you can't find it, hear it, or see it, you something's wrong. Because everybody's in Clarkston. And living quite harmoniously, if I'd say so myself.
There's there's a lot of love in Clarkston. I've got much love out of Clarkston. I really do. I mean, I can't say enough good things about it. I really can't.
But this is the thing we got to understand, is that since the inception of this country, you know, we always, African-Americans, seem to think that we've struggled by ourselves, but they've always been, the Latinos and the Asians have always been there, along with the Native Americans, and some, and if you look into our early history, but we're only talking about Asians and Latinos today, but if you look into our early history, we also had the Irish, Eastern Europeans, all of these people who came who were not Anglo-Saxon or Northern European, who caught a lot of hell alongside of us. But if you look post-Civil War, the Asians and Latinos was, you know, in a lot of the things with us. If you look at the construction of the Transcontinental Railroad, coming from the west toward the east, the Chinese were doing a lot of building. Coming from the east to the west, there was a lot of African-Americans on those same dangerous jobs. If you're coming through Florida and Louisiana and Texas, you come across a lot of the Latino population, the Hispanic population that reside there. We all got kind of put in the same community together and dealt with some of the same new Jim Crow laws. Some of the first, you know, Jim Crow laws were all over the place. They were instituted in California against the Chinese. They were instituted because they were instituted in places like Oregon, because Oregon's Constitution, you couldn't, unless you was there when the Oregon Constitution got signed and you was black, you wouldn't bring your ass into Oregon.
Leave your people right where they at. Is this why we don't see many black people in Oregon?
That's something, that's a 20th century thing. When Oregon first organized, you weren't allowed to live in Oregon.
I could believe that.
But we have a lot of these people living at we lived in the same communities together for so long. You wonder why you got all of the different mixtures inside the African American community. It's because of who we live amongst. You know, you see it in our culture and in the music that we're playing. Think about it. The Asian influence on the African-American community.
Yeah, there's been a lot of cross-pollination.
I'm going to tell you the biggest influence on the African-American community from Asians. What was the one thing on Saturday night, late night, if you was a black kid, you watched on television?
I still to this day watch kung fu movies. I mean, Samurai Saturdays on IFC. That's my thing.
Thank you.
Okay. And if you're not watching Into the Badlands on AMC, you're missing something. I'm just putting that out there. But
you look at influence on our music. You look at the influence on music. You see Wu-Tang Clan, Shaolin Sword Style. You know what I'm saying?
Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to fuck with.
Yeah, you know, you got to sit there and think about all of the things that you see that culture has brought on us. We love us the hell out of some goddamn chicken fried rice.
No, we like Chinese food, period. And I told you how I feel
Chinese
about
food.
Southern Chinese food.
Fuck
there's
you.
No
and you know,
right
the they don't learn how to hook it up. They don't learn how to hook it up because I got a little, you know, Chinese spot over here.
Not with no peas and carrots.
I got a little place over here on South Deshaun that I go to, Super China. I love that lady because she know me. She know my voice on the phone when I call in. Oh, Mr.
See,
Smith, how you doing? You
they
know
start,
you have
they
Mr.
start dropping the order as soon as we call.
Thank you. You looking for chicken? You got your chicken fried rice? You look for bread? I mean, she had me hooked up, not making fun of her. Not making fun of her, but that's how she do. And I come in, she thinks it's funny because I always tell her thank you in Chinese. She. And she just like that shit is crazy. You know what I'm saying? But she hooks me up. But, you know, we got those good people who come in our community to do business with us. Who are
and they become a part of the community.
Yes, you know what I'm saying? And that's wonderful. And at the same time, we have some who, well, don't do.
You know,
well,
I mean, all you can say is, well.
You know,
I mean,
I get kind of that because sometimes I feel like it's kind of a cultural disconnect that takes place. Because
it
like,
is.
I've watched. Because
I've saved a couple of Korean grocers' lives.
You know, because there are some places in which I've watched our people. You know, another minority grocer in the community, whether they're Asian or Latino or whatever, because we got a lot of bodegas and stuff of that nature in the hood now. And you go into the store, and there's sometimes, particularly if it's a first-generation owner, there's a language barrier there. Their English is not so good. And black folks, let me explain something to you in the hood. They speak in pidgin English, and you speak in Ebonics. There's bound to be miscommunication. I come and say, "Hey, Mr. Chain, hey, Shawty, can I get that hookup, man? You got that for me? I don't understand. Mr. Chain don't understand a damn thing you just said. Can you please go? You went to a good American public school, so you know you got to. We teach you communication is key. You know you don't speak the same language. Go in there and use standard American English when you're in a situation in which both of you do not speak the same dialect. Go in there and say, "Good afternoon, Mr. Chang. Can I get my cigarette?" You know what kind of smoke, Mr. Chang? Be like, "Okay, me got you." You know what I'm saying? He go get your Newport 100. You know what I'm saying? And you go do what you got to do. Same thing when you go into the Mexican place. Or the Dominican hair shop. You go in there because I forgot about the Dominican because they slay some hair. Boy, they slay
some
hair.
Yeah, no, don't do it. Any place you walk up and you smell burning hair, nah. Your hair be laid for about a month.
But the thing is, you walk up in there and you having the same problems. You know, talking loud does not take away from the fact that the person still doesn't understand the thing you're saying. So if you go up in there and you get mad because they don't understand and you start cussing them, promise you everybody understands the cuss words of every language, whatever the language where they're in. Then the first German words I learned was the cuss words.
You would. Instead of please and thank
and
you.
And I start calling you all kinds of motherfuckers and this, that, and the other. Yes, I said that this Sunday is my show. Get over it. That's why I put this joke of PG-13 now, because it's
PG-13. We should be R.
Yeah, I should think about that.
But on the flip side, Scout, And I've seen that because, you know, I'm up here on Old Natural. You know that Shell station on the corner of Bethsaida and Old Natty, right? Well, it's kind of interesting because, you know, I popped in there the other night. And, you know, they got steroid stand, you know, security guard, you know, dude sitting up there. He's strapped up like, you know, he's expecting a tank to come rolling down Old National. And it's a very interesting gas station. You will meet some interesting people there. But
yeah,
it's kind of, yeah. So, you know, I mean, people come in there, and this is while you exemplify one side of it, this is the flip side and kind of why, you know, we wanted to do this show. So one of the things I need to explain to people, and this may be a black people thing or a human thing, don't throw nobody's change across the thing. And for black people, I don't know what it is, but that will set us off. Put the change in my hand or something, but just don't sling it. Some dude slings the change across. Words were exchanged. There was a couple of motherfuckers thrown about and all of this. And I'm like, yo, y'all need to just chill. You know, dude, I mean, I don't know where the country he's from. I think he's East Asian and who runs the store. And, you know, he was just, like, going off, and all of a sudden, you know, he's like, motherfucker, get the hell out of my store and all this other stuff. And dude's going back and forth, and I'm standing there. Can a sister just get a pack of Newport 100s so I could go? But, you know, they're sitting up there arguing because dude threw his change across the counter, and he was offended, rightfully so. But these are the kind of things that I see that happens. You know, I like you. I see folks who come in the store, they don't know how to talk to folks. You know, please and thank you goes a long way. But
right. There,
I think there's some cultural differences. What may be acceptable behavior in your country, especially if you're coming into an African-American community and you're setting up a business that's your livelihood, you need to understand some of the cultural differences that we have and adapt, because otherwise, you know, like we're sitting with the Ben Hill cleaners you know, it can cause a problem, and that has really, really stirred up.
We had this conversation, and, you know, I told you I got this, you know, this game that I play called Eve Online. Shout out to the Rebel Alliance of New Eden. My folks, you
oh
know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God.
The Geek Squad. Baby. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, we was having this conversation just a couple of weeks ago online while we were sitting down there crushing space rocks. You know what I'm saying? We were sitting there crushing space rocks. You know what I'm saying?
You're
trying to get our resources up. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, we was having this conversation, and like I told you, our alliance is global. We have Dutch. We have Australians. We were talking about this assimilation idea, about how when you come to the country, it's good for you to be able to maintain your own cultural identity, but at the same time, there's certain things that are common to that particular nation, whether it's the Netherlands, whether it's the United States, whether it's Denmark or Australia. There are certain things that are common to that culture, and you need to be able to understand those things, whether or not you are a visitor or a person that's coming to live there, because if not, you will find out that people take very quick offense to people who are not a part of your accepting and attempting to assimilate to the mainstream culture. You got to have some type of connection to it. And a lot of the times, you know, we got these business owners that come in to our neighborhoods, you know, and they figure because they're giving us a pretty decent price on stuff, you know, this, that, and other, that they can just talk to us in their own kind of way. You know, with some of that is built up on stereotypes of that African Americans are thugs and this, that, and other, and then we have the stereotype that these people are setting up businesses in our community, that they've been given money by the government to come set up in our community, which, let me explain something to you people, that is the biggest damn lie there is in the world. The United States government is not giving money to foreigners to set up business in black neighborhoods. What is happening is that these foreigners have their own banking system. They have their own way to get the money in their community. So let's say, and I hope nobody takes offense to this, because I'm finna use some generic names. Let's say Mr. Patel has just been arrived here from India. He has a couple of friends who've lived here for maybe a decade or so, and they have a small organization. It might be the Atlanta Indian Association or the Gwinnett Bangladeshis or whatever, but they have their own community organizations. He comes in, he needs a job. One of them is going to give him a job, working in whatever industry he's wanting to, that he's trying to get into. And he works hard and shows that he has the ability to be able to manage and be in business for himself and has the drive. They will back him. They will back him. And I promise you, these people have assets in which they can back each other. And they go help him set up, and help him get into a hotel or help him get into a gas station or a dry cleaner, or whatever it is that he's trying to do. So it seems like these people come here and they set up so quickly, but they have the people that came before them are really paying it forward. And that is something in the African-American community we don't do so well. That same thing takes place in the Hispanic and Latino community. If you ever go through a major Hispanic area, you will notice that they will live in a house together. And we laugh about it all the time. We take it as a joke. But it's a very smart thing that they do. They will get in a house, put two or three to a bedroom, pay rent together. That way they can save money or send money home. And they start buying vans, putting ladders on top of them, they start cutting grass. They start doing whatever. Next thing you know, there's a company. And they moving out into their own homes. They start bringing their wives and their children home to America. But even if they came in illegally, they're bringing their families in legally because now they have the money to do so. So do not believe that these people are coming here just getting something free from the government. No, they are not. They are doing something that we do not do in our communities very well, which is called work together. Even if they, when they finally elect their elected official, and you see this in Pedro Marin, he works hard for the Latino community of Gwinnett County. He works hard for them. You ain't seen nobody work harder for their people ever than Pedro Marin works for the Latino community.
Yeah. But on the flip side, though, you know, sometimes these communities get the wrong idea of, or they get a false impression of the fabric of the black community based on their clients. Now, if you have a corner store and all you sell is blunt wraps and beer and cigarettes and lottery tickets, you're not going to get a full representation of the black community, and you may get people who don't really represent. Right, and they are resentful, and this is why black people are resentful, because you make your money, you know, in our community. You do not live here. You know, a lot of these business owners do not live in Southwest Atlanta. They live in the suburbs, you know, Hall County or Gwinnett County or elsewhere. So what we see, especially when you see, you go down in certain neighborhoods, you'll see a corner store in every block. You'll see corner stores, nail salons, food joints, you know, usually chicken wings and Chinese food. And you see them, but that money really doesn't come back. Yes, the businesses pay taxes, but that's the only benefit. You're not making yourself a part of the community. And black people will see you as basically just sucking money out, which is what you're doing. You're taking money and wealth from this community, and you're transferring it to yours, because that business is helping you pay taxes on your house, which is nowhere near the community that you serve, and that's problematic for some.
You were talking earlier about the guy down at Ben Hill Cleaners. I think you did. You there was some type of audio we got.
Yeah, and I'm just looking. He was supposed to be on Robert Patel on WAOK and didn't show up. But, we got a little clip of it the whole brouhaha over there.
Yeah, this is what started the brouhaha over Ben Hill Cleaners. and y'all would kind of understand what we was talking about.
What do you mean? What do you mean, you people?
Well, don't you know, argue with me. You want to start on this or what? You want to start? Heavy start?
You don't have to. You don't have to yell at no one.
Okay, so take it somewhere else and give me this money. I don't want your business.
What do you mean, you people?
Here, $760.
Are you prejudiced?
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah.
Well, what are you doing in the black neighborhoods then?
Black people are more fucking... Give me $760 and get out.
Black people are what?
More prejudiced than anybody else.
We're not prejudiced.
$760! I need to go.
You don't need to yell at me.
I need to leave. I'm behind. I have to go somewhere.
Well, you don't need to yell at me. Black people are not prejudiced.
Okay, you want to pay or not? I'll keep it back there and lock the door and you come back tomorrow.
No, you won't keep my items. You won't keep my items.
So pay me. It's a minimum is $10 credit card.
I don't have $10 on me.
Well, you know, $760. You don't have $760?
No, I don't. I have $3 on me.
A fucking asshole.
What you call me?
I'll never come back again here.
What you call me?
Yeah. Here.
Why do you have to curse at me?
Here, take your fucking clothes and everything. You come outside. You know, I can't reach over there.
Isn't that why you have that thing that comes out?
It comes out, it's going to hit your car.
You shouldn't curse at the customers.
Yeah, customer my ass. Here. Get your shirts. Here. Get out.
You shouldn't be prejudiced either in black neighborhoods.
You motherfuckers are more racist than anybody. Black people are... I've been here 20 years. Just get out.
You are video. I just want to let you know.
Video. Send it to Obama.
Okay, there's so much to unpack in that clip.
Son, I'm sorry you had to hear that. You
I've heard something like that before.
That's racist.
You talking about we're racist.
I couldn't get... I was trying to follow it. And,
okay.
You know, there's something going on now that just fucked up.
I mean, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but every time I listen to that, I gotta laugh. That shit is funny. It's sad, but it's funny.
All right, quick.
Okay.
Yes, Carla. How you doing, Carla?
Hello?
Hello, Carla.
Where are you calling from? Hello?
I'm calling from Atlanta.
What's your name?
Okay. My name is Bruce Greig.
Hi, Bruce.
Bruce Greig is in the house. Bruce Greig is a legend in his own. And I appreciate you calling in, brother.
Hey, I'm always here to support you, man. I know what you're doing.
I see. Bruce's father, Bruce is from LaGrange originally. And his father is at the recreation center in which the Democratic Party of Troop County meets in on a regular basis is the William Greig Center. And his father ran that center for many years, was a pillar of the African-American community down there. And Bruce has done a very great job of attempting to follow up and support the things that his father has, not just in Troop County, but even up here in the Atlanta area. You have a radio show also, don't you, Bruce?
Well, I'm a former talk show host from down at WAOK, but Greg Street and I, who's a radio personality on the other side of CBS, he and I run a program called the Street Academy where we focus on violence prevention and anger management. So, you know, I'm always doing radio, but I guess God, that's what I wanted to do with radio, but God wanted me to work with these kids, so that's what I ended up doing, bro.
Well,
thank you
for doing that, but have you been listening in to the show? And
Oh yes, I've been listening, I've been laughing, because especially when you said pretend. I've been wanting to say that for so long. But let me say this: we've got to somehow take that dollar away from those individuals that treat us like that. If you can't treat us right,
I told
somebody the other day, and I'm not really, I haven't really decided on who I'm gonna vote for. Because what I'm really voting for is economical power. We ain't going to have nothing to change until we got the power economically to make some changes. We got to put out, especially like here in Atlanta, we've got so much economical power, but we're not using it together.
Because we've been fooled into thinking that we don't have any power. They keep telling you, you're poor and you're broke. But if you're poor and you're broke, Dollar Tree doesn't think you're broke, Family Dollar doesn't think you're broke. All these small businesses that are popping up, they know you're not broke. So, and economic power leads to political power. That's just the way it goes. I mean, at that time, your comment in terms with this story, you know, one of the things that drives me crazy about this story is that when people first were telling me about this, I'm thinking, you know, the Queen is on Ben Hill. And I was like, that's crazy, because right around the corner from this cleaners is a black-owned dry cleaners that's been on Campbellton Road for over 50 years. And at first I thought this was the store they were talking about. And I'm sitting back going, well, why aren't people just going around the corner? It is literally right around the corner. The Ben Hill Custom Cleaners is on Fairburn. The black-owned one is on Campbellton Road. All people have to do is literally walk your dollars right across the street. It's a done deal.
You know, I live in the Hampton area out near the racetrack, and there's a family that owns several of the fast food stores. And if you don't respect my dollar, I'll take my dollar somewhere else. I don't care if it ain't but a dollar. You won't get it. You won't get it from me, because you got to treat me with some type of respect.
And that's the strongest protest anyone can do. When you got a valuable tool sitting right in your wallet, move your dollars somewhere else, and they will learn how to act right.
That's right.
That has been the most frustrating thing to see, because, I mean, I see it all the time happening. And what frustrates me is that other communities will come here. I used to live in Hayville. I will watch Latinos in the Hayville area. They will go all the way to Buford Highway to keep their dollar. If they can't find it on this side of town, they will go cross town and keep it in their own community. We don't do that, and then we wonder why we're where we are.
That's right. That's right. That's absolutely right. They will shop in only their stores.
Right. Exactly.
And that's the problem.
I just wanted to call and say I'm enjoying what you all doing and listening. And, you know, I do radio. I'm always interested in people sharing the knowledge with others. I wish the younger generation could be listening to some of what you all are doing, because a lot of times we've dropped the ball with the younger people. It ain't the government's fault. It ain't the police's fault. It's our fault right at the house. That's us. That's on us. And I'm 57. And it's on that generation that's my age. We were too busy, including me, chasing that dollar, trying to do better financially instead of investing. We invested in the other part of life to get that dollar in the capitalism, but we stopped investing in our children. And in any society that does not invest in their children properly, that ain't no society. That's chaos. And that's where we are right now. In the community, we got chaos in our community, sister and brother. So I appreciate what y'all are doing. I'm listening. If you get a chance, tune in and listen to me. I'll be on this Saturday on KISS 104 with Mitch Faulkner talking about everything that's going on in Atlanta and LaGrange. You know, so, you know, I'm always here. If there's anything that you all are doing when it comes to kids, please, brother, contact me, because I'm down. That's my focus, it's the youth. So,
I'm going to contact you. I need to talk to you, because I'm a parent. I'm a Tri-Cities High School parent. We need to talk.
Okay. Well, we would love to do some things with any of the kids that you have. My phone number is 404-889-3008. Once again, that's 404-889-3008. 3008, and I'm the executive director and founder of the Greg Street Street Academy. Give me a call, or you can Google me at Bruce W. Just Google Bruce W. Griggs, and you'll get my websites. You know, y'all keep doing what you're doing, and, you know, we got to stay through. And one thing, too, let me say this. We got to stay prayed up. We got to stay prayed up because it's bigger than us. There are a lot of things that happen to because I hate to say this. No, I don't hate to say it. We are the chosen people, and there are things that are continually happening trying to take us, lose out, get us off of focus from that. You know, things we just need to do what we're supposed to do because God said that the last will be first, and they're trying to keep that from happening, and it ain't going to work. All right, y'all be good.
All right, thanks so much for calling in. Man, I'm telling you. And, you know, I mean, it's so hard, and we get tired because it's like we say the same thing over and over again. But it's really good to get calls, you know, to find out that, hey, people are listening. Because when we, you know, we do this show, we really have no idea who's listening. So we really get a big kick out of when we get feedback saying that people are listening because we do this, really, this came out of just fun. You know, we didn't expect it to turn into what it is, but we're delighted and we're glad that people are getting informed. Scott, are we in extra innings today?
No, we're not in extra innings today. We got three in. We got 3 minutes left in the show.
That video, no. I mean, the audio from it, I mean, maybe because I have a sick, twisted sense of humor. That video cracks me up, but there's a couple of things in that video that I found problematic.
Right.
One of the things I really would have liked to have heard the conversation before he started recording, but that still doesn't excuse the man for, you know, using profanities, particularly with a child in the car. There's no excuse for that. That's just
you seen the video with a child in the car, yo.
And that's just not the way you do good business. Right. And I don't care how mad you are.
Right, and the thing that gets me, and I had one of our folks on Facebook who were listening ask a question was, you know, that the guy didn't even have enough money.
He has short money. I have a problem with that. I really do. And once again, I'm not excusing the business owner.
Right.
But you were short money.
But the guy, I understand from what I was listening to it, the guy said he had his card on him. And he wanted to use his card, but, you know, so the guy, instead of being $650, it was going to be $10 because he was going to use his card.
Now, right, it's $10, and then it goes to $7 into the change.
Yeah, a lot of places are going to charge you extra if you use their card in their mom-and-pop businesses because there's a percentage of each sale that goes to the merchandising people who allow you to swipe your card. Now, a lot of the large companies don't care because they can absorb the cost. Small mom and pops cannot always absorb the cost. The ones that attempt to absorb the cost will tell you up front that you have to have a minimum purchase limit. You know, you're going to a lot of these gas stations and whatnot that are owned by mom and pops, and they'll tell you they got to be at least $5 or $8 for you to use your card, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's why. So that kind of was problematic to me that you didn't want to pay the extra dollar, the extra amount with the card, but then you didn't have enough money to pay. That's just the cost of doing business, people. We can't get mad because people are trying to do business.
Right. So that's the cool side of the pillow on this, you know. I mean, that really didn't help his argument out, but, you know, there are certain things, and my girlfriend, I wish she could have called in to tell the story about Wayfields in East Point with the
she might have been, you had a caller that dropped. You had a caller that dropped, and I don't know if that was her or not. It might have been her.
It might have been her because she was going to tell a story about we were in Wayfield in East Point, and the meat manager or the guy behind the counter, she was asking about a particular cut of meat. And he was trying to tell her a certain cut of meat. We knew it was one cut, and he was trying to tell us it was another. And dude sucked his teeth. He was a Latino gentleman. He sucked his teeth, and Scott, I swear to God, the whole store was like, stop. Oh my gosh, you're going to die. You're going to die. Okay.
So, we're going to have to see, get your friend on to tell us that story with our burn treatment. Well, everybody, this is Downsizing 30, and we're out. Peace.
Peace.